This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, has a critical mission, and managing its facilities and logistical resources efficiently and effectively is key to FBI meeting that mission. This involves the rendering of a suitable work environment, and more importantly, providing conditions that protect the health, life, and safety of all FBI employees. What are the top priorities for the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division? How's the FBI pursuing more sustainable business and supply chain practices? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division. So, Pat, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. Melinda, welcome as always.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Pat, I'd like to kick off our conversation with some context. Would you provide us a brief overview of the mission and evolution of the FBI?
Sure. I'd be happy to, Michael. Thanks. The FBI was first formed in 1908 with just a few agents. It has grown gradually but steadily. It is today a intelligence-driven national security and criminal investigative organization. The growth has been extremely rapid in the last decade, post 9/11, where the national security mission greatly expanded and intelligence functions, and really an intelligence umbrella over all that we do, what was overlaid on the existing organization. We are today in 61 different countries, nationwide in every state with 56 regional offices and 400 satellite offices.
What's the size of the budget?
$8 billion. And that's a very significant increase. We were just a fraction of that in 9/11.
I'd like to transition to your specific role. Can you tell us more about your duties and responsibilities as Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My job and the people in our division, we provide facilities and all sorts of logistics and services really to support the agents and analysts who are involved with the actual mission work of the Bureau. And so our job really is to make them effective in what they do. We provide space for every FBI mission and every FBI support element around the country and overseas. In the services area, we provide vehicles, printing, graphics, any sort of product that they need in that area, telecommunications, and a variety of electronic services as well.
So, Pat, with such important responsibilities, sort of the backbone of the FBI making it operational, what are some of the top management challenges you face in your position, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
Probably the number one challenge that we're facing is we've gone from a period of a decade of significant growth in personnel and budget, where the primary emphasis was in providing the resources and the equipping and providing the facilities for rapidly growing teams across the country. We're now in a much flatter budget environment given the overall federal budget, and so we want to maintain the highest level of service and support for the Bureau so those agents and analysts are most effective, but doing so in a very restrictive budget environment. That's probably our number one challenge that we're facing. Secondly, and like any large corporation or large government entity, we've done things a certain way, and we're now going through a significant change process to provide greater value, accomplish things very cost effectively. And so it's really leading change is a major dynamic. Related to that is our supervisors, leaders of the organization, assuring that we have people with the vision and the knowledge of their specific function and expertise in that so that they can provide the best services for the Bureau.
Along with the challenges you've described, I'm sure you're leading your division can also be fraught with unexpected surprises. What has surprised you most about leading your organization?
Yeah, I had quite a few surprises. First, and let me really for our listeners, the FBI was very specialized and very sensitive and secure mission is primarily in leased space, and much of that in private leases. That was a surprise for me, especially coming, as I'll talk in maybe a few minutes, from more of a Department of Defense background. Mm-hmm. The level of the security that we are required to have is extreme, very sensitive information. And that really was something that, again, was prepared for. But that being in every single area of everything we do, those aspects of security having such a critical piece of that. And then I think lastly is that the speed of the transition from really a steady state gradual growth to this very sudden mega growth and just in really in a very short period of time, those all kind of came as surprises that for the organization or for me personally.
So with such a critical mission and with so many challenges that you face and some of the unexpected opportunities you face, I want to know a little bit about you. Could you tell us about your career path? What got you to this position?
Sure. Grew up in a very small town in upstate New York, and I went to West Point, became an Army officer in the Army Corps of Engineers. I served around the country and 7 years outside of the country during a 25-year tour. All of the latter half of that career was spent in managing Defense Department bases around the world, or in doing major construction and design at those bases. So I retired from military service in 2000 and actually continued to work for the Corps of Engineers out in Pittsburgh. Had a great job out there. And after 9/11 occurred, frankly, I was really angry with the attack perpetrated on our citizens, and I wanted to become very directly involved with the security and defense of the country again. So I saw the FBI opening, and here I am.
Well, given your military background and now your sort of law enforcement background, I'd be interested to understand, in your mind, what are some of the characteristics of an effective leader? And more particularly, who's influenced your leadership style?
Well, let me hit on some of the characteristics. Vision is tops the list. Mm-hmm. To be an effective leader, you have to have vision and have to have really have that well developed. Integrity needs to be absolute and unquestioned. And then really passion. You have to feel very strongly about what you do, love what you do, and the importance of that. Courage and candor probably are next to my list, but I think those top few are the most important ones that I see. As far as who's influenced me, actually, my dad, he was a World War II veteran. He served in the Pacific, was involved with seven island invasions, wounded twice. He was truly part of Tom Brokaw's The Greatest Generation. He came back, got married, raised a family. Actually, talked very little about what he did, but he went on to a career as a highway engineer in New York, building highways and what was the start of the interstate system. Maybe two other folks, a Corps of Engineers general who was actually a history instructor of mine at West Point and great Corps of Engineers leader. I had the opportunity to serve with several times in my career. I think the last person I'd like to mention, very memorable, was General John Abizade. I knew him when he was a two-star, worked directly for him. Fantastic person. unquestionable, unimpeachable integrity. It was amazing that the level of integrity that General Abizaid possessed, and he went on after I knew him, of course, to become CENTCOM commander and leading the effort in Iraq and Afghanistan.
What are the top priorities for the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division? We will ask Patrick Finley, its assistant director, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? What is being done to ensure the safety and soundness of the country's credit union system? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more wisely? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative new technologies and open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. So, Pat, before we delve into specifics, I'd like to understand better your strategic vision and, more importantly, your top priorities for FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division. Would you give us a brief overview of those top priorities and tell us a little bit about your strategic vision?
Okay, sure. Thanks, Mike. I'm going to overlay that on what the FBI has established. It's a great strategy management system, and it's been gradually building over the last several years. It's a relatively standard approach across the enterprise that really links all together as it was part of the director's strategy. So we take these diverse mission and mission support elements that are all linked together in an overall strategy for the agency. Our part of that is we have three primary objectives, and that's provide mission essential, secure work environment and facilities, promote safety and environmental stewardship, and provide responsive logistics and services. And we overlay all of that, do so with a very cost-efficient, disciplined utilization of our resources. It really all fits together very well. Literally everything we do is related very directly to that. And then we have specific initiatives that we'll talk about a little bit later on that cause us to be able to achieve those objectives.
Well, why don't we actually, as a follow-up, could you describe some of those key initiatives and some of the strategies you're using to pursue some of your priorities?
Okay, sure. What we do is taking those very high-level objectives, we, as we term it, cascade those down into specific initiatives and actions that will achieve that objective. And so I'm just going to cover a few of them. But a primary one is to very efficiently use space, our lease space, as we'll get into also in a little bit, and all of our space. It's very expensive. It's very secure. We want to use that very efficiently and get that at the very best possible cost to the taxpayer. So that's really a key initiative of how we are better utilizing that space now than maybe we were in the past. And also to achieve the mission objectives, security obviously, but also good collaboration between our many diverse teams that are working in that space. Another major initiative is to increase the professionalism and analytical ability of our workforce. And we're doing that through a variety of means, one of which is really well supported by the Bureau. We have a university education program, and promising candidates are able to compete for a fully funded university education. It's off-duty while a person works a regular work week. But so a person needs to be very committed to using their time to pursue this education. Obviously, we're recruiting for the right people for the skills that we need for the future. We're really increasing professionalism and analytical ability of our workforce through training, university education, and specialized recruiting, very closely looking at what the skill set we need for the future and going out and seeking that either through training, education, or recruitment. Third initiative is really focusing our investments and the permanence and core infrastructure of the FBI. We are in lease facilities. Leases expire. Typically, those will not be a core permanent infrastructure. An example of some permanent infrastructure would be the FBI complex and campus at Quantico, where we now have the training academy, the laboratory, and two other divisions.
Pat, earlier you spoke about mission expansion at the FBI post 9/11. As the FBI's mission has evolved since 9/11 and given heightened security concerns, how has your function evolved to meet the security issues, and what are some of the unique issues faced in supporting today's FBI?
First off, which was a little bit of a surprise for me, even coming from the Department of Defense, every FBI employee has a top secret clearance. In defense, if you needed it, you had it. Otherwise, you had a secret or a confidential clearance. With every FBI employee having a top secret clearance and to promote the greatest interaction of people, much of our space is set up that you can openly discuss very classified information with your counterparts and can go from office to office with that information. So it really is to promote collaboration and information sharing. That has very unique implications for your space, as you have to build that space and carefully secure it and accredit that space so that very sensitive classified information can be openly discussed, transmitted, processed, and collaborated on. Probably the biggest single change in that area in the FBI is that prior to 9/11, most of our information was much more at the secret level. Post 9/11, with the intelligence agencies really operating at the top secret level, there has been a gigantic expansion of that top secret connectivity, telephones, and information sharing, and then the consequent facilities impacts of all that. Today, anywhere in the intelligence community, if your space is accredited to the top secret level, any member of the U.S. intelligence community could utilize that space for whatever information or mission that they're working on. In almost every FBI location, we have three different IT systems. You have an unclassified system, you have a secret system, and you have a top secret system. Not everyone has the same three, but they're present in many, many locations. So that then results in much more heat load in our space. Standard commercial space would have to have supplemental cooling to be able to house so many computers in such a small space.
Pat, from your perspective, can you talk about what state-of-the-art information technology looks like to support facilities and logistics, and what gaps are yet to be addressed?
Okay, I'll talk just briefly on that. The facilities and logistics IT really falls under the broad umbrella of the FBI IT systems, and we're moving forward exceptionally rapidly with a financial management system across the Bureau that one of your previous guests from the FBI, Rich Haley, spoke about. That's in its final stages and is very exciting. With that, we are having modules that will address property accountability, vehicle fleet, and many other aspects. And so that's really exciting. It's moving forward as we speak.
How would you compare leading the FBI's FLSD with similar organizations in government or the commercial space? And what do you do to benchmark the performance of your division compared with industry standards and leadership?
Okay, well, first, overall, there's more similarities than differences. Obviously, we're very similar to other intelligence agencies in the federal government. The biggest difference I've covered is that the security aspects that overlays everything we do is probably the primary difference that we would have as compared with, say, other federal agencies here in D.C. Really utilize the private sector for most everything that we provide, and our business practices are ultimately based upon private sector business practices. A lot of similarities, but the security as well as the federal acquisition rules limit a direct comparison. In every one of our functional areas, We seek to have a metric, in some cases going directly to the private sector metrics, in other cases starting with those private sector metrics and then making an adjustment that, well, we have to do something. It requires 30 days of advertisement per the federal acquisition regulations. So we start with what the industry is doing and then modify accordingly where appropriate, so that we still have a good foundation for the metric as it applies to us in our little bit different circumstance.
So, Pat, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures that the country faces, most federal agencies have embarked on a cost-cutting or cost-constraint efforts. Since your area is one of mission support, I'm assuming there are certain efforts that you're pursuing as well. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. And actually, Michael, this is very coincidental, but I'm just recently sending out an all-employee email of their particular role in exactly that. If I may, just to kind of talk about the FBI's budget a little bit, FBI has roughly an $8 billion budget. Roughly half of that is compensation benefits for employees. We're a thinking organization. After that, the other half is largely spent on infrastructure support to make people most effective in what they do. And I have about a fourth of that remaining. So in really every single area, we are pursuing efficiency measures. And one of the things with all of our real estate and space is we're looking very closely at the utilization of that, how we can use that better, good metrics for space utilization, and also cost of space. What is that costing us? Upfront costs for the construction and securing of it, and the annual costs through rents. So we have really an excellent handle on what those costs are. Then that's one area where vehicle fleet, we do an exhaustive study on mileage of vehicles, maintenance history, number of years that a vehicle can stay in the fleet, all really to minimize that cost and get the greatest value for the taxpayer's dollar in every area.
And so I'd like to switch gears a bit and talk about, one thing is a strategic document you put out or was put out, the 10-year field operation acquisition plan. But more particularly, I'd like to know about the consolidated FBI HQ project as well.
Sure. Let me hit both of those. First, they have both been really great collaborations with GSA and the private sector. In fact, underlying all of these initiatives is private sector funding. To touch on the field office program, post 9/11, the FBI was expanding. It was organizing joint terrorism task forces, field intelligence groups, a very large national security presence in those very sensitive facilities across the country. At first, there was no space in existing locations to house those teams together, so your most critical teams were actually not housed, co-located with the rest of your missions, and really caused great operational issues. So the field office program was to consolidate those teams and providing a very secure, collaborative space where all those team members could work closely together. We started that in 2004, got 33 projects approved out of 56 field division headquarters across the country after having assessed that several of them were adequately sized and secured. And we've completed 27 of those projects now. So it's been a great partnership with the private sector and GSA, and it's been had a greatly positive mission impact. The proposed consolidated FBI headquarters actually has many similarities. It will use the private sector as the source of funding. It also seeks to consolidate many separated headquarters locations we have here in the D.C. area. And it's a great partnership, again, with GSA and the private sector. There was a request for information that had been put out a few weeks back, and there was an industry forum some weeks after, maybe a month back now. The RFI was very well received, the request for information, and the industry day was well attended. I think 400 people came. So we're really wanting to get the ideas of the private sector of what is the best way to do that. But GSA Administrator Tom Gerling has also been on this program, has really championed the concept of considering the use of real property exchange for the very expensive and valuable space on Pennsylvania Avenue, where we're now located, in exchange for our new site and building. And so one aspect of the project would, how would the private sector monetize the value for the federal government's benefit of the current location?
How's the FBI pursuing more sustainable business and supply chain practices? We will ask Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more effectively? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative technologies in open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. This edition highlights the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness by introducing you to government executives, public management practitioners, leading academics, and the differing ways they tackle many of the pressing public management issues facing us today. Hear from NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, OMB's Danny Warfel, NCUA Chair Debbie Matz, VA's Dr. Peter Levin, and Rich Boley from the State Department. All of this and much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order or download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Bathrop. Pat, given the push to modernize and green the federal supply chain by reducing waste and increasing efficiencies, would you tell us more about your efforts at FBI to adopt sustainable business practices?
I would be happy to. Actually, and that's also something that relates back to the field office program I was talking about a few minutes ago. We established at the start of that program, going back to 2004, that every building would be a LEED building, Leadership in Energy Environmental Design. And we've been very successful in that. Every building built on that program has either been a silver or gold building by the U.S. Green Buildings Council. And actually, the Chicago field office of the FBI was the first platinum existing LEED building, existing building category built in the world. It is a collaboration between the building owner operator and the FBI as the tenant, to have very environmentally oriented business practices and how we manage the building. You don't want to drop a Coke can in the trash in that building. We have established recycling programs at FBI locations across the nation, and to include obviously our headquarters, and both the recycling things that we would think about here in an office environment, but also recycling at ranges and how we get value for recycled products, including expended ammo and electronics. So a great initiative that we're really seeing some great results for. And then energy conservation, we use a lot of energy. The number of computers we have at our work locations really use energy. So we have energy conservation as a primary theme. In fact, just recently appointed a single energy czar, energy conservation officer for the FBI and for our Quantico complex. So we can really identify where we could, the things we should be doing to save energy. At the headquarters building, the Hoover building, everything is very high efficiency, fluorescent lights, recently installed high-efficiency chiller units for all the cooling that we needed. So it's really made a huge cut in the in our costs.
I was wondering, with doing all these, and I didn't know about the Platinum building in Chicago, but there's got to be some challenges to doing this. Could you tell us a little bit more about those challenges that you're facing?
Sure. Several of the challenges are, again, we are operating in privately leased buildings, and so it has to be a good collaboration between us as the tenant and the building owner for those locations that I talked about, and Chicago was a great example of that. We also, of course, follow the federal acquisition regulations. And so when we are recycling something that has value, we have to make sure that we are following regulations closely and also meeting the requirements of federal appropriations law as far as how we receive those recycling proceeds back. There are challenges. I'm really pleased that we've been able to overcome so many of them with really the great folks we have that are involved with these initiatives.
Well, Pat, you, part of your mission is to procure services as well as real estate, land, buildings, what have you. And you mentioned the FAR, you mentioned the federal acquisition requirements. I'd be interested, how do you, in your role, ensure the fiduciary responsibility that's associated with procuring these services and materials?
Well, I would say first, daily, with excellent collaboration really between our chief financial officer, our office of counsel, and our training division. We've got really great training on procurement integrity, and every FBI executive and everyone that's involved in any aspect of acquisition has training and has refresher training. And we have in our office of counsel, and I call them often. I call them before this meeting to refresh ourselves on what aspects of what we might be discussing have some procurement integrity to make sure we're avoiding those. And then when we are engaged in an acquisition, we are very careful in reminding people of that, actually having a signed non-disclosure form for every person that's engaged in this. So that he or she is confronted with that very upfront and is absolutely clear that this information we have access to has sensitivity and cannot be discussed with anyone else.
Pat, we've seen federal agency managers demonstrate measurable improvements in programs by integrating data analytics into decision making. Can you talk about how you are using analytics to improve services and quality, and perhaps to identify new solutions and services?
Yes, particularly in the facilities area, but I'll go into the vehicles in maybe a moment, is that we have analytics of own facilities, of our service orders, service ticket, preventive maintenance, that we're doing those, the cost of accomplishing those, the frequency. It's really precisely what's needed to keep up on some very complex facilities and in some cases some aging facilities. So we use that heavily and continually. With our nationwide footprint, especially in lease facilities, we do real estate financial modeling of every single transaction. So we're looking at the acquisition costs, the range of costs, the real estate market, the annual costs over the term of the lease, the amortization of any improvements, and really trying to make best decisions for the taxpayer by this attention to our analytics. And in such areas as vehicle and fleet warehousing, we are using or starting to use analytics to measure what we're doing and in turn base them on cost metrics, and oftentimes taken directly from the industry, as we talked about earlier.
Given your critical mission, your office requires staff with technical skills and expertise. What are you doing to ensure you have a well-trained and technical workforce able to meet today's challenges?
First of all, having the vision of where are we going to be in 5 and 10 years is critical that we plan for and develop people for the right skills. Every single person has a training and development program. We actually, in several critical areas, we have on-duty training sessions on a recurring basis with instructors within the organization are brought in to teach a particularly technical skill. The Bureau has a great university education program where people apply for that very high potential and relate to the FBI's mission, and they go to school on their own time to seek out a degree that will advance the Bureau's knowledge of that. So we have multiple people seeking right now real estate, financial management, construction management degrees. Obviously, recruiting for the right skill sets and ensuring we're getting those through the recruitment process is important. And the last program I would like to mention is that the Bureau in 2005 started a special advisor program where we go out to some of the top business schools in the country, really seeking soon-to-be graduates who have worked in the private sector or in industry prior to that, so they have some experience. Then they become graduates of with an MBA from one of these programs, and then come in and develop them within the organization. It's been a fantastic program for the FBI, and we've gained great benefit from that.
So, Pat, we talked about the era of fiscal constraint, and agency leaders need to act with some strategic intent to make sure that their employees are focused on the prize, so to speak. I'd be interested to understand what you're doing to make folks motivated and focused on the mission of your division.
By the way, that is the perfect question for the time that we are entering. I try to communicate a lot, and subordinate managers communicate with employees so that people are aware of what the country, what the FBI, and what our division is facing, and there's good communication on that. Send out a monthly email, and then I go around, and as do all my supervisors, but I specifically like to meet with each in this kind of group in a kind of a small group basis about once a quarter and kind of talk about where we're headed, where we've been, what are some of the challenges that we are facing, and really encourage, and we have great employees, encourage the employees to their ideas that we can use and then become the basis for some of the improvements that we need to make and enabling us to move forward. We are in a period of change. Actually, probably my two favorite management books are Leading Change by John Kotter and Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I think the commonality of those is that have a vision, be proactive, and then move towards achieving that vision through collaboration and a coalition.
So what are you doing to enhance the management of some of the programs in your portfolio, let's say the automotive fleet, construction management, or facilities and operations management?
Already discussed a little bit on the data systems that we are employing. In each area, the commonality is what is the best value for the taxpayer and the lowest cost, and what are the things that influence those costs. And so we address that very carefully. A specific example is how we utilize space. What are our assumptions as far as what we need for space? Are those valid? Can we do that better? And we're coming up with a much more collaborative environment where the three of us are facing each other and able to collaborate very easily than maybe the high-walled Dilbert cubes, more of the 1990s. They use less space, better collaboration, lower cost. So really is every decision we make is based upon the best management of that resource and for the greatest value for the taxpayer.
So with the automotive fleet, are you guys doing more with hybrids or anything like that? Or
yeah, we are looking at hybrids. We have a couple of tests going on right now. We have some very good gas mileage vehicles. What we bounce up against in that is that we're also a law enforcement agency. And so we have to balance the needs of being a law enforcement agency's agents that are part of SWAT teams with the best mileage. and then the best utilization of the vehicle.
That's really an important point, that with every decision you make, the unique mission or multiple missions of the FBI have to be taken in consideration.
Yeah, we really have to carefully weigh that. And what we do in that case, by the way, is that we have a certain number of vehicles that are allocated to a field of vision that are purposely for a SWAT. And so those people, while they're on a SWAT team, had that type of vehicle, but then it's also an assignment process so that as they move on to something else, then maybe they get a better gas mileage vehicle.
What does the future hold for the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division? We will ask Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more effectively? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative technologies in open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. This edition highlights the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness by introducing you to government executives, public management practitioners, leading academics, and the differing ways they tackle many of the pressing public management issues facing us today. Hear from NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, OMB's Danny Warfel, NCUA Chair Debbie Matz, VA's Dr. Peter Levin, and Rich Boley from the State Department. All of this and much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order or download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. This is The Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness. Brought to you by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Center This Week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the state, local, and federal level. For federal agencies to be successful in their continued pursuit of government-wide initiatives, such as reforming federal IT, using new technologies to improve government operations and citizen engagement, and enhancing customer experiences across government, they require support and assistance. Kathy Conrad, Principal Deputy Associate Administrator within the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at GSA, explains the dual mission of her office, which has positioned itself as the government-wide leader in identifying and fostering the adoption of innovative technologies and open government.
So our role today reflects both where we've come from, our legacy of serving the public, and our role today as an engine of innovation to help agencies across government meet rapidly changing needs. We have a pretty interesting history spanning over 40 years, which most people aren't aware of. Our roots were planted way back in 1970 with the establishment of the Consumer Information Center, which provided the public with a central source of government information. It's evolved over the years, and in 2002 became the Federal Citizen Information Center, or FCIC, when GSA created the Office of Citizen Services and Communications. At that time, GSA combined the center's 30-year legacy of serving the public with the innovative approach of what was then called FirstGov, which used the rapidly growing power of the Internet to serve as the first sort of single front door to the government. And then more recently, in 2010, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technology was created, returning GSA's internal communications back to its own office and adding the Office of Innovative Technology to expand our role in leveraging new technology to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of government. So today we have a dual mission. Mm-hmm. We deliver world-class experience to the public when accessing government information and services anywhere, anytime, through whatever channel they choose, building on our long legacy, and then developing solutions and services federal agencies can easily adopt that will enhance their ability to innovate, deliver services, engage the public, and save valuable resources.
GSA provides agencies with practical tools, models, and proven practices that can improve the efficiency and effectiveness of government operations while enhancing citizen engagement. Kathy Conrad elaborates.
Well, we have a very lean but incredibly productive office, about 100 super talented, hardworking people, plus a team of excellent contractors and a budget of about $35 million, pretty small. But we're a little spark plug igniting innovation all across government through two primary organizations, the Office of Citizen Services and the Office of Innovative Technologies. The Office of Citizen Services provides consumer information and services to the public wherever, whenever, and using whatever device or communication channel they choose. The Office of Innovative Technology identifies and fosters innovative technologies that help agencies increase efficiency, enhance effectiveness of services to citizens, and achieve cost savings. So most of our programs are divided into those two offices. We've got, as I said, the Federal Citizen Information Center, which runs USA.gov, Gobierno.gov, Kids.gov, the National Contact Center, and PublicationsUSA.gov. We have the Center for Excellence in Digital Government, which runs our Challenges program, which you're familiar with, and supports the Federal Web Managers Council. We have a mobile PMO, which has more recently been combined with our Digital Services Innovation Center. And then in the innovative technology arena, we have the Federal Cloud Computing PMO, our FedRAMP program, Federal Data Center Consolidation Program, and data.gov, along with a few others.
To deliver its mission, Kathy Conrad outlines three strategic goals.
So to deliver our mission, we have three key strategic goals. Innovation, which we define as expand and enhance public engagement with government using innovative, cost-effective solutions and practices that can be adapted and adopted government-wide. Second, customer intimacy, as I mentioned. And there we want to deliver best-in-class customer experience that is driven by results and that other agencies can use. And finally, operational excellence. Develop, implement, and accelerate adoption of new technology platforms and initiatives that can improve operational efficiency and effectiveness across government. We seek to foster federal leadership in implementing solutions that are faster, cheaper, and more sustainable.
Conrad's office plays a lead role in pursuing a cloud-first policy.
It's forcing agencies to consider whether there are better, more agile ways to use scarce IT resources to enable achievement of desired program and mission outcomes. It's important to remember cloud computing is not about the technology. It's about mission enablement. So what is it? Lots of different definitions, but I think the best way to think about it is as a utility, where you buy the services you need to meet real-time demands. Cloud solutions offer infrastructure as a service solutions like servers and storage that can be used to host websites and meet other requirements, software as a service for applications such as email, or platform as a service which can be used for testing and development, other requirements. In terms of benefits, there are really three key benefits. First, it's cheaper. Services are automatically delivered and consumed as they're used, which means you only pay for what you actually use. Agencies can shift from owning and maintaining costly physical assets to managing service delivery, reducing the need for ongoing capital expenditures. And cost savings are also achieved from aggregated demand. If you can aggregate demand across an entire enterprise, you benefit from economies of scale and save significant funds over the long term. Second, it's actually better in terms of performance. On-demand services enable flexible, rapid response to dynamic business needs. So you know that as your needs change, you can get the services that you actually need. And it's faster. You can provision services rapidly and automatically, dramatically decreasing time to deploy or implement solutions. So it's better, faster, and cheaper. Seems like a pretty good deal.
GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies also accelerates and incubates government-wide social media and public engagement solutions that focus on transparency, accountability, and citizen engagement. But Kathy Conrad acknowledges that innovative ideas and programs cannot come to life in a vacuum.
Partnership and teamwork are at the core of all of our operations. We depend on broad input from the stakeholders we support through established channels like the CIO Council, the Web Managers Council, the Government Contact Center Council, the communities that we've helped establish, as well as through citizen engagement. You know, one of the advantages of using social media and of open government in general is that there are tools that we use to get direct feedback from our customers. And so we consider ourselves working in partnership not just with the agencies, but also with citizens so that we can understand what really is working, what do they really need, and how do we do our jobs better.
More information on this and other center resources is available at businessofgovernment.org. There you will find how the business of government is not business as usual. For the IBM Center for the Business of Government, I'm Michael Keegan, and this has been The Center This Week. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Patrick Finley, Assistant Director of the FBI's Facilities and Logistics Services Division. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Bathrop. So, Pat, I get a chance to talk to most of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships, and you've highlighted the role private sector plays in fulfilling part of your mission, i.e. with real estate and buildings and what have you. But could you tell us more about how you're leveraging partnerships and using collaboration to improve outcome results?
Yes, that is so important for where we are headed, really, all federal agencies. We have really important other agency collaborations and private sector. One of the most beneficial for us in the FBI has been the premier real estate collaborative body and institution. That's the Urban Land Institute, based here in D.C. We are an active member of that on one of their public development councils. And actually, the project I mentioned, the consolidated FBI headquarters of the RFI, was we actually had that council review that project from many different angles and give us some advice on moving forward, which we included in our report for that. So that sort of collaboration with those sort of professional organizations is extremely beneficial. We also collaborate across the government, obviously with our great partners in the General Services Administration, but also in the intelligence community and the law enforcement community. We have similar partnerships. Some are for information, sharing what other people are doing and capitalizing on their best ideas, but also from an efficiency standpoint, where we can share space, share a service or a contract or a facility. That's better for us and better for the taxpayer.
Now, Pat, if I could ask you to break out your crystal ball for us and look into the future, can you give us a sense of what you see as some of the key trends and innovations within the logistics and facilities management discipline?
Yes, and I'm always looking for a better crystal ball. In the entire services area and logistics, we all would expect to see much more just-in-time delivery, doing away with or greatly decreasing warehousing, and so getting just what we need right on time, which has contracting, federal acquisition, as well as warehousing and management implications. Some pilots that are being tested is to enable us to collaborate, our mission teams to collaborate better in an open office space environment. Wireless classified IT systems are being considered. They're being reviewed. Obviously, you need to protect the information, so it's there are some really serious concerns with that. But where you're in an envelope that is protected against the information getting out, but you could be wireless for that classified system within that envelope, that would be a great enhancer of collaboration and enable savings instead of having the more normal hardwired tower at every single person's location. The overall how to drive down the cost of space by better utilizing it in a collaborative environment is a theme that all of us share, and I expect that we'll see huge changes and downward pressures to use space better so that when you are here in this office, say, Michael, you have a place to go to. They may not be the same every time. So we're really using the space best for the organization and kind of going away from some of our more stereotype approaches where people have assigned desk, let's say.